This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/JoelDuggan to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 157 for Wednesday, July 29th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight, as he often does, is Mr. Hammond Chamberlain of Beyond the Playlist and Grumpy Cast with Daryl Skeels. Welcome to the show once again.
Hey, this is twice in 1 month. I'm not sure how I rate, but thanks.
Yeah, we're going to line it up three times. If you're on for your regular scheduled appointment
next month,
then it'll be next week as well.
Yeah, that's so good. That'll,
I'm down for that. I'm happy.
Yeah, I didn't know I'd ever become a regular on anything other than something I created. So I appreciate that.
That's the easiest way to become a regular, actually, is just, you know, do your own thing and invite yourself on every week. It's worked for me. It's worked for me. Or just ask. No, that's the other thing. Did I ever tell you the story about how I got on Comics Coast to Coast? So I was an avid listener, drawing webcomics and listening to that show and being a Frog Pants fan. And slowly but surely, at the time, it was John Sanford and Justin Thompson were the two other co-hosts. And they started to seesaw back and forth as to who could make it. And then ultimately, they both got really busy. And there was a couple of episodes where Brian was solo interviewing the artist of the week. And they were still fine, but it was a different dynamic. It was a different vibe. And it felt like a lot of work for Brian. Because the conversations, they don't flow as naturally. Interview shows, I find, or podcasts, I find, often have a different flavor when there's three people compared to two.
Oh, yeah.
So I just emailed Brian and I said, like, hey, I noticed, you know, that you were complaining about, not complaining, but you'd mentioned that last minute, you know, Justin and John could make it. So you had to fly solo again, blah, blah, blah. You know, I've been doing this for a while. If you ever need somebody, poke me and I'll be happy to join in. His one line email reply was, what are you doing Saturday? And I've been on ever since.
Well, that's great. Well, I mean, that's how I got, I interviewed Brian by himself when I first got started.
Right.
I think it was like episode 7.
He still calls him James, by the way.
John Hammond.
John. Yeah. Sorry.
So I interviewed, and so, you know, that was great. And I appreciated the fact he came on. He was one of the first ones that got some big numbers for me and some notoriety from people outside of my family because people knew who he was. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to this last weekend when I had the Artist Roundtable on. And I had him and Nick Gregory and JF DeBow and Phil Root on. And we all did art and all that kind of stuff and talked about it. The dynamic was so different with the four guys joking and laughing about their own art and other people's stuff. And Dunaway was kind of leading the charge as far as making comments about technique and, you know, stuff like that. It was very, very different. It was a different Dunaway flavor than I got as a solo. So I can definitely see how adding personalities to it help make the other personality stronger.
Yeah, it's a, we've got a really, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but we've got a really good mix, I find, over on Comics Coast to Coast right now. Like, Brian is the just the entertainer and the excellent host of moving things along. Matt has a lot of very specific, like, grander art questions. And is absolutely unafraid to tell Brian to shut up and just ask his question. Like, Brian will be asking the guy about, like, his favorite wrestler from, like, 1985. And Matt will be like, well, I have a question that's actually on topic, Brian. And he'll just go. And then I tend to be more of the technical stuff. Like, I want to know what people are drawing with and how and on. And so we have a really nice nice balance about that kind of stuff. We've actually, while we're talking about Comics Coast to Coast, we've got some really cool animation-related guests coming up. So I'm expecting Matt to have a lot of fun with that. I'm blanking on their names right now. I think Ron Chen is one of them. There's something Robertson. What's his name? Steve Robertson? Oh, I'm sorry. I know them all by Twitter avatar, but not by name as of yet. And some people don't use their name on Twitter, which is confusing. So if you're out there, people, and you're making stuff, get your first name or your first and last name or something really close to it on Twitter. It helps everybody out.
Or you get confused from a horrible character who spent a lot of the money on Jurassic Park.
Dinosaurs, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And no matter how many times you correct him, it always falls apart.
The way that Brian remembers things. Look, he called me Dugan for the first 6 months that I was on that show. I corrected him every single time. Yeah. And like until the point I pulled him aside, I was like, Brian, you're killing my brand. Like, just help me out here.
Well, luckily the Hammond kind of holds its own.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a unique name. I don't know. Well, I know you. That's it. I don't know any other Hammonds.
Well, I know people with it as a last name because that's what it's far more commonly used as. But to have it as the name you go by is something. It's a middle name. I'm actually a James.
Right. Yeah. Is it James? Did I have that right?
Yeah. I think this is the first time I've ever done it on a podcast. I'm James Henry Hammond Chamberlain.
So I thought you corrected me earlier when I said James and you said, no, John.
That's what Brian calls.
That's the word association that Brian makes. Yeah.
Yeah. John, it's John Hammond that he calls me, which is a blues master or a blues guitar player.
Right.
Or the guy from Jurassic Park.
Yeah. He caught me off guard. He caught me off guard on the show one time. He was like, yeah, I'm going to go talk to John Hammond. I was like, who are you talking about? And it took me a minute because then he went on to say something about like the artist roundtable. And I was like, whoa, wait, what? Wait a minute. I know who you're talking about now. What? Why did you call him John? Yeah. Yeah. Really, really bizarre. So the artist roundtable is out now?
Yeah. It came out last Sunday.
Awesome. I need to listen to that.
And it was a ton of fun. We came up with the phrase sword sling.
Mm.
Which is not some new form of swimwear, but it could be. We talked about Brian's superhero close-up man and his arch nemesis, Stiff Arm.
Nice.
JF DeBoe drew an album cover of a band, and the album is called Skulls and Shit. I drew stuff that makes my 5-year-old, 6-year-old look like she's a better artist. Because that's what I do.
Ah, nice.
Phil Rude knocked it out of the park like he always does. And then Nick Gregory came along and told us all he does, this amazing artwork he does on an iPad 2 in like 2 apps.
Oh, God.
And everyone was floored.
Yeah, I have an iPad 2. It has trouble just thinking sometimes
do art. He did this amazing piece called Ant Hulk, and it's basically the Hulk Ant-Man mashup.
Nice. You sent that to me post-show a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did that on an iPad too.
Wow.
And it is gorgeous. And if you haven't seen it, go over to jhammondc.com and look at the art these guys did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing that I always find so funny about just talking about art with Dunaway is he's so passionate about it and he's so good at it. But he doesn't draw as much as he should.
Yeah.
So I take the opportunity to poke him whenever I can. Like, dude, draw more. And he's got, I'm not sure if he mentioned it on your show, but he has a little online store where you can get an avatar from him. Like you can get a cartoon social media avatar drawn by Dunaway.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like he does this. He's built the site. He's done some things. And then no one knows about it.
Yeah, and then like the Kickstarter stuff he did last year for the superhero thing, he did. And then the year before that, he did a bunch of postcards that kind of all linked together as a thing for the other one he did, the video game one for Andrew Allen. Sorry, I'm having a hard time putting names.
Yeah, he doesn't talk about that on Comics Coast to Coast either. And well, that's not the best venue for it because we're usually there to tote the guest.
Yeah, I get told a lot that I'm fairly interesting and should be interviewed, but I'm not going to be interviewed on my own show because talk about an ego stroke and kind of killing something. That's not going to happen.
I'll hijack your show. Maybe we'll do a double header next time I'm on. We'll just turn tables. I'll Hulk out. I'll flip the tables. Like, all right, now it's time to interview you.
Hey, And just so you know, book sometime in November, because I'm going to have you on for my my second year show.
Okay, November. Got it.
Yep.
Got it, because I plan that far ahead. Sure. Actually, that's kind of a lie. We are booked almost through the end of October on Comics Coast to Coast.
And I've recorded episodes leading me into September, okay, as far as Beyond the Playlist.
Right. So I do live stuff, so I can't do that. Mr. Show Off. Well, one thing I can do is book people on this show ahead of time, which is something that I like doing, because it's one of the few things that I have left that happens every week is finding, you know, who's going to be on the Citadel Cafe. And we've got someone new to add to the roster. Mr. Brockett Vola is going to be joining the Citadel Cafe, which is going to be awesome. I'm still working out the details with Brockett. We exchanged some back and forth last week after he was on. And I think, if I can work it right, he's going to be the third week of the month. So he's going to come on once a month, just like you and Lou.
So after hearing him last time, he's somebody that I want to get on my show.
Oh, absolutely. And he's got some really cool background stuff.
I was going to say, he dropped a couple things in your conversation that made me realize some of the things he might have done. Mm-hmm. And I got real curious about some of the things he might have done. So I feel like I need to get a hold of him.
Oh, absolutely. I'll introduce you guys after the show. I'll just send you an email and be like, Brockett, Hammond, Hammond, Brockett.
Sounds good.
You can ask him about Skulls and Shit, the Macbeth Coles Notes play that he directed. Yeah, no, but I'm excited. I think Brockett is going to be a fun addition to the Citadel Cafe. And once again, it's nice to then only have now 1 week out of the month that I have to find a new guest. I used to go to Ryan Murphy a lot too, and I still will, but he records both Gamers In and Zombies Ate My Podcast now on Wednesdays. So it would be like, wow, a triple header for him.
Wow.
Which I don't know if I want to do that to him.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I really like about kind of the way you've got it set up is all three of us, we're smart and conversational, and you kind of have a different but it's very different with each of us. The relationship, the the conversations, our interests, the things that we kind of focus on are very different from show to show. So even though we come on monthly and we're familiar, but it doesn't get boring because week to week it's different because of the personalities and the interest in the topics.
Yeah, and there's been enough that happens in the course of a month, right, that you can kind of catch up and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Well, you'd have to be under a rock in our community this week to not realize that Nerdtacular 2015 is happening under everybody's nose. If you're not aware of this, let me tell you. Once a year, the community in and around the Frog Pants Podcasting Network, that's frogpants.com, descend on the Snowbird Resort in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's all headed up by our friend Scott Johnson with Brian Ibbett and Corinne and a bunch of other people that help organize it. There's lots of producers and stuff that are there. I don't want to get into naming too many names because I will forget somebody and then feel horrible. So, yeah, it happens on this Friday. So it's the 31st, correct?
Well, actually, they have the opening gathering tomorrow night.
Yeah, but that's not when the shows are.
Yeah, so Friday they start, Friday about 10,
right,
and they run till really late Friday night, and then Saturday morning they start again about 10, and then they run super late, and then Sunday they kind of infest Snowbird, and people stay long, and then, like, I'm leaving Sunday afternoon and coming home because I'm just 45 minutes.
You get to drive.
Yeah.
You lucky son of a gun. That's the main reason I'm not going, is because the flights are just ridiculous. Unfortunately, Utah, Salt Lake City is not a hub, which means that when you're coming from farther away and it's more than one hop, then the airfare adds up quite quickly.
Or you end up doing a trip that takes you from Canada to Tallahassee to Chicago to Denver to California to Vegas to Utah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was looking at trips this year, my two options were from here to Toronto, which is about a 2.5 hour flight, and then from Toronto to San Francisco, which is like 4.5 hours. And then from San Francisco back to Salt Lake City, which is, again, another hour and a half, 2 hours maybe. It's not terribly long, but it's long enough. And then the same thing on the way back. You go to San Francisco first and then Toronto and whatever. The good news is that the flight from San Francisco to Toronto is a very large plane. It goes very high. It's a very smooth ride. You're at like almost 40,000 feet. Like, it's ridiculous. Unfortunately, from Halifax, you ultimately have to go somewhere else first. Whether that's Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, New Jersey, somewhere. So that first hop is always in like a little jet, and it's like an hour and a half to 2 hours. It's bumpy as hell, and it's never pleasant for me. So it takes a lot. You know, the price has to be right, and it's hard to find a flight all the way to Salt Lake that isn't like 14 hours. I realize there are people that are coming from Europe. I get that there's longer flights out there, but yeah, it's a long haul when you're not from like the California or Denver, I guess, area. Or I guess there are some people that come from kind of like the Midwest, but yeah, it's difficult to get to. It is worth it. Oh my gosh, is it worth it? But freelance this year for me has just not been super high, so I had to be a grown up. And there's actually quite a few people that are making it this year. So while I'm sad that I'm not getting to see a lot of my producer friends and some other friends that are part of the network, I'm noticing a long list of people that I was all, like feeling sad that I was going to miss that are not there. You know, so maybe this is the year to miss. Like maybe this is the year to stay home and save my pennies, because next year everybody will be doing the same thing and hopefully return. It's such a fun time. And for anybody that's been listening to this show, if you enjoy the kind of stuff that we talk about on the Citadel Cafe, then check out Frog Pants. Check out some of the shows that are on the network. A lot of them are video game related, but not all. And a lot of them are happening live this weekend with like panels, and there's going to be the trivia section and stuff. Alpha Geek Radio, or Alpha Geek Media, I guess I should say, is going to be streaming the whole thing. You can find the schedule on alphageekradio.com. If you're going to be around Friday and Saturday, watch them live, jump in the chat room. It's hilarious. And seeing all of these people in the same room that do these shows so often, like weekly, usually throughout the year, when they all get into the same room, it's just bloody hilarious. And I would really encourage everybody to check out the Nerdtacular 2015 extravaganza this weekend. Nerdtacular.com, by the way, is also where you can find a lot of details about the event.
My wife is kind of excited. They're going down to St. George to see plays this weekend, and I'm going to be up at Snowbird. And they're going to take the Roku box with them, and when they're in the room, and they'll throw on Alpha Geek Media on the Roku channel so they can watch some of the stuff. I mean, they're not huge fans, but like if they can catch the Grumpy Cast, they'll watch that. If they can catch something else I might be helping out what they're doing, then you know they'll do that. So
that's amazing. You know, like I never thought about how easy it would be to just grab, you know, your set-top box, whether it's a Roku or a Hulu or an Apple TV or whatever, just chuck it in your bag when you go traveling.
When we went to Hawaii, we took an Apple TV and a Roku with us. We hooked them up in the hotel rooms. And we got to watch what we want. Let's see, what's the phrase? We got to watch what we wanted, when we wanted, on what device we wanted to watch it on.
Yeah.
That's a court killer's thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And tunein.alphageekradio.com, if memory serves, is where you can go to find out how to add Alpha Geek Radio to all of the devices that you may favorite, depending on which ones those are. The only question I have is, like, you're going to Hawaii. Why are you bringing TV?
Because, okay... And we travel, especially when we went there, we traveled very low key. It was very relaxing. It was, you wake up in the morning, you grab your coffee or your tea and something to eat, and you hang out on the balcony and you watch the sun come up and you talk and you hang out. Well, that's fine for the adults, but we have kids that we are traveling with.
Right.
And the kids are used to having something just to kind of hang out with in the morning, kind of just watch too. I mean, they're not going to listen to us talk about whatever. So having them try to sit through whatever's on TV was killing them. Mm. I mean, whenever we've traveled with them and we haven't had something, it's killed them. So now we bring something like a Roku with us, and they can watch the things that they want to watch and not have to worry about ads and don't have to worry about them saying, hey, I don't want to watch this. Can we fast forward through it? I mean, they've been raised pretty much in a house that doesn't have cable.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea of having to sit and watch whatever's on is completely a foreign knowledge or foreign idea to them.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Well, I feel like I dominated the Nerdtacular kind of talk, but you're going to be there and you're doing a live show with Daryl, right?
Yeah, we're going to do a Grumpy Cast. It'll be our second year doing it. And last year I ended up kind of horning in on a few other things. And I've been sending in submissions to FSL every week this year. So hopefully I get to do something there with their All-Star game. And then, you know, I'm also helping out with the setup and things like that with the registration with Corinne and Dave. And I did that last year too, and I had a great time doing it. Yeah. Know a lot of people. So I figure it'll be just one of those events where I go up and hang out and have a good time, and I'll do my one thing and then enjoy just being a guest and part of the other things.
Yeah. But one of my favorite things is the day after. Like, that's a really chill.
Oh, that Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah. I think my favorite things from last year were actually, as much as I enjoy being part of it all, it's very busy and you feel pulled in a lot of different directions, especially when you're like, for me, like, I'm not a big producer on the network, but people know me. So, listeners and friends want to say hi, but then I want to hang out and talk with some of my producer friends too. So I'm a fan and a producer at the same time, as is everybody. And it's just, it's so hard to see everyone on those 2 days. But the cool thing is that, on the Thursday and on the Sunday, the days before, like kind of leading up to and post, a lot of the producers kind of chill out and hang out, and you can do a little bit more like low key stuff, which is nice.
I'm really nervous this year for some reason for the Grumpy Cast, though. I don't know why. Maybe it's because, I don't know, maybe it's because we've been doing it for a while and there's an audience now, kind of.
Don't be nervous, man.
But it's one of those things where I'm now aware that people are aware that we're doing things. Because last year when we did it, we'd only been doing it for a couple of months.
Right.
And the awareness of what we do and who I am in particular, because everyone knows who Daryl is.
Right. Yeah. From Morning Stream. Yeah.
Yeah. So in my case, I was just that guy next to him. But now, you know, Beyond the Playlist has a bit of a following, and then Grumpy Cast has its awareness. And I guess I'm aware of that awareness, and it's kind of weighing on me a little bit.
What was the name of the segment that Daryl used to produce for The Instance?
The Tip Giver.
Tip Giver. That's what it was. That was always my favorite thing that he did. I like the Trek Nerd, but the Tip Giver stuff was just, it killed me.
And I've never actually heard, I think I've only heard like two or three little clips of it.
Oh, really?
And the only reason I know it's the Tip Giver is because it's still associated with him in some way.
Mm.
And so I don't, you know, I only listened to The Instance enough to get to know Dills and Patrick and, you know, some of these people that are on now. Mm-hmm. I don't play WoW, which is going to be weird considering what I'm listening to coming up.
Yeah.
So.
Do you listen to The Instance now?
Some. Now that it's kind of broadened out and kind of turned into Blizzard show instead of WoW show, which I think was a pretty smart move.
It's a smart move, but I can tell you it's been kicking ass for quite a while. Basically since Patrick went full-time as a podcaster and Scott brought Patrick in there and they had the dynamic of Dills, Terpster, Patrick, Scott, all of whom may not be available any given week, but usually three of them are. So the dynamic of the show changes a lot, but for whatever reason, they've just hit this really cool stride. And maybe it is the fact that they've also been letting themselves talk about... They were letting themselves talk about other Blizzard stuff before they made it, like, official.
Yeah.
But it's such a good show. It's so entertaining. I've been listening for a while, and I've noticed an uptick in the last, like... Basically since episode 400. Like, the last 20 episodes, I want to say, have just been really, really good.
Yeah.
So what have you been watching? We've been talking about Rokus and Apple TVs and streaming and all that kind of stuff. What's been on the boob tube?
So for me, I watched a documentary called Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley. And it's this documentary that was made about the director and then the production of that Island of Dr. Moreau film that had
Val Kilmer and... I don't remember who the girl that was in it, but they all had makeup on and stuff.
Yeah. It's not a good movie.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah, and from the sounds of it, it was kind of a bad doomed to be a bad movie from the beginning.
Mm.
And the one thing I can say, without giving too much away, not one person in the documentary said one nice thing about Val Kilmer. it's amazing how... No one had anything nice to say about him. And then, you know, Brando was coming off of his daughter's suicide.
Yeah.
And when you get egos like his and Val Kilmer, it was like they were playing chicken with their egos. And it was bad. And then the director stuff, he was kind of new. He'd made a couple of kind of genre films beforehand. Mm. And then he was given this budget, and it just, it seemed as if it was just heading for disaster from the minute they said go. And, but it's an extremely interesting documentary. I would recommend, it's on Netflix now. It's really interesting.
Cool. I get the impression, and this is just pure nostalgia, that Val Kilmer is Iceman in real life. Like you don't like him in Top Gun. You don't like him in real life. I just, it's that, that's the impression that I get. And no matter, it's like that first time you see an actor in a movie that just really, really resonates with you. And then every other time you see them in anything like that, you can't unsee that person, like that role.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
If, like for me, it's like Tom Cruise. I've discovered that I'm past the jumping on the couch thing.
Like, I never really saw that, so I never got that as, I never really associated him with that.
Well, just all the other, just in every other crazy thing, all the tabloid stuff, like I just, I don't follow that stuff anyway, but ultimately somewhere's online, Facebook somewhere, you get hit with something. But the whole crazy thing, I'm kind of past it. So I don't really think about that when I see him in movies, but I, he's the same dude in every movie he's in.
Yes.
Like it's, they're all good. I can't deny that I like them. Like he's a good performer. But he doesn't have a lot of range.
No.
So I.
Well, it's the same reason why I'm a little bit worried about Will Smith being a bad guy in Suicide Squad.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree. That's something that I had. Me and Lou were talking about that.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm not really convinced that he can be. If he's going to be a bad guy, he's going to be wisecracking the whole time.
Yeah.
And because that's just what he does, and I feel like it's just going to maybe remind you too much of like. What's the word? What's the one I'm looking for? The iRobot, you know, or the first,
the ID4. It was the same thing in that too.
The Men in Black 4?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, no, Men in Black, but also Independence Day. He was.
Oh yeah.
It was one liner after one liner.
Yeah. Yeah. Seeing stuff that he couldn't believe, you know, like that kind of thing. The over the top dramatic reaction to, I've never seen this before. This isn't supposed to be real. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So I'm not super excited about that. So I've noticed, I mean, this is completely off topic, but I noticed also that there's now pictures circulating from the set of Batman v Superman.
Oh, really?
They look terrible. Avoid them if you can.
Okay.
Well, it's like set photos.
Oh, okay.
So you're seeing these costumes in like, you know, all right, cut. And then all the lights come on and then people are snapping photos. And it's like, come on. Like all of these things are designed to look a certain way in a certain light. And then when you're looking at them just hanging on the wall or sitting on a dude's suit, like it's just, it's not, I'm not overly happy about it.
Yeah.
There's a conversation thread with Brad from, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club on Facebook that I was having, that it was entertaining me. I might be pissing people off, but I think Brad and I might be on the same page. We're having a really difficult time. I'm going to go see it, but I'm having a hard time jumping in on the hype.
The one thing I can say, just from what I've seen of the movie, there's the potential, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. The potential is that the sequel could make the first one better.
Hmm.
Because the first one right now, it doesn't sit well with me.
See, but, I like the first one. I like where they're going with Superman. It's Batman I'm worried about.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm worried about all of it, to be honest with you. I'm not a huge Zack Snyder fan. He's only done one thing that I really liked.
Which was?
300.
Yep, good movie.
Watchmen, I thought it was boring. And I know that I'm going to get some hate for that, but...
I would say that the source material... left a lot to be desired anyway, you know,
well,
I'm going to get some dump on me for that too, but I read the book. I read the novel I read the graphic novel after I saw the movie. I borrowed it from Peyton and I liked the movie better and I didn't like the movie.
Wow.
So there's that.
I don't know. It was one of those things where I wanted to like it going in. I really did. And when I got done with it, I was bored. And I was kind of confused, and I was afraid of big blue penises for months.
Months, yeah. I my one thought in the whole movie when I was watching it in the theaters is like, Owlman, that is stupid. Why is he an owl? That is so dumb. Oh, Hoots is his ship, and it looks like an owl. Wow. Like, we're right back to that little owl wind-up toy from the
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans in, like, what, the 80s or the 70s? Like,
that was 79 or 80,
It was on the screen in front of me. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, really? Come on.
Yeah.
I was not a fan. Not a fan. So
I bring up the one other thing I watched that I really want to share?
Absolutely.
It was this hour and 17 minute movie on Netflix called Creep. It has two people in it, Patrick Bryce and Mark Duplass, he's best known probably for The League as kind of a comedic actor. And he plays this incredibly off center, very unstable, kind of creepy guy. And it's this kind of a found footage thing, but it's got the two guys, and it's about the dynamic between these two guys and then what happens. But there are far, far worse ways to spend an hour and 17 minutes of your life. And I can't say enough about seeing it. I don't want to say much about the movie, but I just recommend everyone spending the hour and 17 minutes with it.
Yeah, that's a little bit longer than a television show. Like, that's not terribly long at all.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. I had the opposite problem with with Netflix this week. I, against better judgment, and probably as a result of some, I don't want to say peer pressure, but just things I heard on the various podcasts that I listen to about some of these movies, I thought I would check them out. So I started watching Django Unchained. I am not a Tarantino fan. I've mentioned that on several podcasts. Every once in a while, I will find one that I like. I want to say one of the early Westerns he did that was pretty cool with Sandra Bullock. Blanking on the name right now, but I remember enjoying that. As a matter of fact, it was like Sandra Bullock, DiCaprio. I want to say Gene Hackman was in it. And I enjoyed it. I have stopped watching Django Unchained twice. The second time was for good. The first time I stopped because I thought, oh, hey, I should, you know, I feel like I've been watching this for a while. I should probably go get some work done. It seems like it's a pretty low point. I should probably go, and I stopped. And then Netflix told me that I had only watched like 1/3 of the movie. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a long, like, I thought we had gone through the first act and have moved into like the climax is coming up. I don't want to get in the middle of it and then have to stop to go do some work. Turns out that nope. It was like, so far as I can tell, it's like I've watched two movies already with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And now I'm about to embark on the third. No, I'm not. I'm not watching it. I'm done. So I'm not going back to Django Unchained. And
I actually have that saved as something I want to watch on my playlist for Netflix. Mm. I just have never found the desire to try to watch it because other things pop up that I'm more interested in.
See, and I've been in the mood for a Western, and I mentioned on the show a few weeks ago that I watched Hell on Wheels season 3 or 4. I can't remember which. But it was good. I enjoyed it. And it was good Western. Lots of, you know, gunslinging stuff. And that was what I was in the mood for. And I thought Tarantino, having liked the other Western or one of the other Westerns that he did, might deliver. And I'm just not a fan when things get really kind of over the top. There's a lot of rap music playing while there's a shootout or something going on with Jamie Foxx. I'm just like, I want Western music. I don't want, this is supposed to be 19 or 1880 something. I don't want pop music in my Western, you know, unless this is a ridiculous over the top comedy, then it doesn't fit. And that's, I find a lot of movies do that where they don't commit all the way. They want to put a funny moment in, or they want to put a kind of a weird, odd moment in. But if your whole film isn't like that, then it just rocks the audience, and I find it very kind of off-putting, which is one of the biggest problems I had about The Great Gatsby, which I thought, well, I'm in the mood for a period piece, as I was with Django, so I moved on to The Great Gatsby. Nope, stop that one too. It is really weird. Have you seen the one with DiCaprio?
Yeah, we saw it in the theater.
Wow.
And
God, that was a long theater show for you.
Yeah, and so Baz Luhrmann has done some pretty offbeat, but I call them like lightning in a bottle kind of things, like Moulin Rouge and even Romeo and Juliet to an extent. Mm-hmm. they have this kind of energy to him and this vivid color and the sound and the way he mixes periods and costuming and mm-hmm. and all of those things that I really like and pay attention to. He's got a way of kind of putting them into a giant ball and making them fun.
Yeah.
This movie had almost none of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't fun. There was nothing fun to be had here.
Yeah, and Tobey Maguire is terrible.
Yeah.
Like he's a one-note character the whole the whole movie. I only watched like the first act of it. I was like, I can't go on.
I'm beginning, and I don't know how I feel about saying this out loud, but I'm beginning to wonder if Tobey Maguire is kind of a one-trick pony anyway, because after two Spider-Men, he started being the same. It started being too samey.
He wasn't very good in those either.
Like, yeah, just, and then by the third one, it was like he was just phoning it in. And I haven't seen him do anything kind of reaching and pushing himself ever.
Yeah. Do you remember the Cider House Rules?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so I remember liking that movie, but I'm just struggling now. Like, did I like all of the performances, or was I just really partial to Charlize Theron and Michael Caine? I feel like Tobey Maguire delivered in that movie. I'm not remembering anything different.
And I can't think about Seabiscuit either, because that's the only other thing I can think of that he kind of would be in and stand out.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. It wasn't really of any interest to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do. I find him... I feel like if I was to assume, because I don't know, I feel like he's probably kind of weird in person. And I feel like a lot of that carries over into his characters, and they are kind of weird. And there's not an appeal there. But his lines fall flat. I wasn't a huge fan of him. I also have gone on record saying that I'm not always a huge DiCaprio fan. However, I have to say that he is, again, one of those actors that I never want to sit down and watch a movie with DiCaprio in it. But when he's in it, I can't deny that he's good.
I have to say that I gained a lot of respect for him with two movies, Catch Me If You Can, and Shutter Island.
See, I didn't see Shutter Island, but I like Catch Me If You Can. That was a great movie.
You need to watch Shutter Island. Shutter Island is awesome.
Okay. All right, I will. I'll have to take that under advisement. And I'm trying to remember. There's another girl. I think it's Elizabeth Debicki. She plays Jordan Baker in The Gatsby. She's blonde in real life, but they have her in a very short brunette wig. Mm-hmm. So she's not the main love interest. She's not Maguire's cousin in the film. That's played by Adelaide Clemens. She's the friend. And I was captivated by her. And when she first came on the scene, I thought, okay, this is like I want to keep and see where this is going. It's got the period feel. She's really charming. She's got that like 1920s, 30s attitude going on. And it was great. It's a spectacle. Like the set dressing in that movie is fantastic. It's really over the top.
Yeah. Baz doesn't, it seems as if he, I don't know. I think a lot of it had to do with the chemistry of the people he was working with and less about what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And I just wasn't, there was a lot of kind of back and forth with characters supposed to be doing something and then not, and I just thought, gosh, if I'm going to spend the next 3 hours watching these two people circle each other, it's going to drive me crazy. And then it got to the point where they started playing like modern hip hop music over the 1920s, 30s parties. And I was like, no. One of the reasons I wanted to watch this movie was to be immersed, like to kind of get, even if it was over the top, like even if it was, you know, Lerman crazy, I kind of wanted to be kind of in there. I do remember watching Moulin Rouge and liking it. It wasn't my choice. I feel like it was somebody else's pick that night, but I did like it. Like I can't deny that I didn't have a good time with it, but it's not really pointing to anything authentic. Like the whole thing was just over the top.
Well, yeah, the whole point of Moulin Rouge was kind of it to be this fever dream.
Yeah, and it's a show about a show, right? Like that's
But the whole point of it, I think, with the vivid colors and the kind of the mishmash of styles and periods and songs and lyrics and pop culture. I think when you step back, it's more of a of a fever dream of this other place that kind of exists, but not really. Mm-hmm. But The Great Gatsby is about a place that really existed and a time that really happened. And I don't know. It was very, the juxtaposition didn't work.
Yeah. And The Great Gatsby is a book. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So see, I might actually go read the book. I feel like the book might be a lot better.
It was one of those mandatory readings when I was in high school.
Yeah, I did not do a lot of that. All of our English reading in high school wasn't the classics. It was local stuff. It all had to have an X amount of Canadian content, and a lot of it was Nova Scotian. Dude, talk about boring. Like, we read a couple of Shakespeare plays, and that was okay. But I mean, like, when you're 16, Shakespeare is not the easiest thing, nor is it the most interesting. Like, but I would have loved to have read, like, The Great Gatsby, or I don't want to say I would have loved to read Moby Dick, but, like, it would have been nice to read The Lord of the Rings in high school. Like, just something that has that kind of clout, right? But not some weird surfing novel about some dude off the coast of Nova Scotia. Like, do not care. You know?
I have a list of books that I was given when I was in college, and it started out as 100 books that you should read to consider yourself well-read and so that you could get references that people make. And over the course of my life, I've actually added things to it, new books, things I've discovered, things that mean things to me.
Cool.
And I've added to it and made this list. And I will be happy to share that list with you if you would like.
Absolutely. Yeah, send it along.
Okay.
Yeah, do you have it handy?
Yeah, it's let me see if I can pull it up.
Well, you don't have to pull it up right now. I'm just saying, like, if you send it to me, I'll include it in the show notes if you want.
Yeah, I'll have it to you when we get finished. I'll find it and send it to you.
Cool. Yeah, no giant rush. I can always add it to the show notes like tomorrow or something like that. Like, yeah, okay. Not a big deal. Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go on to one last movie that I did not like and did not finish. Noticing a theme this week, anybody? It has been the most frustrating week for me on Netflix. All I want to do is sit down and enjoy a meal and watch something. Now, I may not have time to watch the whole thing, but I'm kind of looking forward to the next meal where I get to sit down and finish the thing I like. Not happening. I thought, I'll watch a cartoon. I like cartoons. The last one that I watched was How to Train Your Dragon 2. I loved it. I couldn't tear myself away. I decided to go for The Book of Life.
Can I tell you something about How to Train Your Dragon 2?
Sure.
Halfway through, something sad happens. My youngest daughter leans over to me, bawling, and says, without saying too much, please don't let that happen to you, Dad.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle that.
Yeah, there's a lot. There, it's not a movie for kids.
It was rough for a six-year-old.
Yeah, it is not a movie for kids. I also felt the same about Big Hero 6. Yes. If you've got kids under 10... you're going to have a lot of questions. Yep. There's going to be some poignant life conversations with those kids if they're not. We had them.
And my 6-year-old absolutely loved Hero 6.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. back to your Book of Life.
Yeah, the Book of Life. The Book of Death, maybe? Wow. I remember seeing the art book in a local bookstore here, and I thought, you know, this looks really unique. You know, all the things that I want in an animated movie and all the things that I complain about that I never get. It's always the same. It's a lot of cookie cutter stuff, you know, and I should have just gone and rented something on iTunes. I couldn't find anything on Netflix. I didn't want to spend the $6. So I thought, well, whatever, this has been sitting on my queue for a while and I'll watch it. The first thing that you're going to notice about this movie is that the story is cookie cutter. Like, it is supposed to be this amazing sort of trip into Mexican folklore. And it starts off like an episode of Jimmy Neutron. Like, they throw you into this weird school trip museum tour, and then you go back in the story, and all the characters in the story, as the museum guide is telling it, they're all wooden dolls. They're all wooden figures, which is neat. It's a cool design thing. I liked some of the inventiveness of the design. But all the kids that she's telling the story to in our time are terrible stereotypes. There's not a unique kind of kid in there. And then on top of that, the story, it's not very inventive. It's just like, well, I thought I was going to get a really cool Mexican kind of folklore thing. And I feel like they just modernized it and turned it into like what sells cartoons these days. Like, they really could have had a unique thing. and they didn't go with it. And I feel like this came out really close to when the Box Trolls came out.
It did. It was like within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And Box Trolls was awesome.
Yeah. See, I haven't seen that. So that's next on my cartoon list is the Box Trolls. I know that I've got to fix that. I'm just going to go out and buy it. Like next time I see that Blu-ray somewhere, I'm just going to pick it up and bring it home. I had mistakenly remembered that the Book of Life was stop motion. I didn't realize it was CG. So I thought, ooh, wow, this is going to be really cool. And, well, there were some things, like, I can't remember their names, but there's two gods, the Lord of the Land of the Remembered and the Lord of the Land of the Forgotten, who I believe is voiced by Ron Perlman. I might be wrong. But they were very interesting. They had some very unique designs. Their animation was beautiful. I have to say that some of the animation in this was really quite well done. There's a lot of very dynamic stuff. But the character designs on a whole are really, really noisy, and it's really hard to look at. Like, the main character's father is wearing, like, this crazy matador sort of uniform, and there's just, it's noise everywhere. And I can appreciate that a lot of Caribbean cultures and Mexican culture and stuff like that has a lot going on. Like, there's a lot of bright colors, there's a lot of patterns, but there always has to be that kind of, what I'm looking for, compromise, when you have like that 70-30 push where you have to have a place for your eye to rest. And I could actually feel my eyes getting tired watching this.
Well, especially when you put it on a 30-40 foot screen.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be hard.
I saw it in the theater with my daughter and I took both of them. And right. my youngest got bored. And
wow.
My oldest and I both had the same feeling that we kind of hated it. And it's hard for me to say that I dislike a number of cartoons, but there are a number of them that have come out recently that I can't tolerate. And this one and Planes, they're right up there at the top. Oh, and even the new SpongeBob movie fell flat for me. I'm the one who takes the kids to movies because my wife just sometimes can't tolerate the squeaky voices and the goofy. And so I'll take them. And I've taken quite a few bullets in the most recent few months in some of these movies. And Book of Life, Planes, SpongeBob, they all kind of fell flat.
Yeah.
So
the thing that really was the nail in the coffin for me was the singing. There's a point when the guy who's trying to get the girl, the main story is basically there's two best friends that grew up, and there's this really pretty girl, Maria. She goes away to a nunnery, and then she comes back, and they're both trying to vie for her attention. One of them is a giant chauvinist asshole, and the other one is a musician turned matador, and he doesn't like killing the bulls, so he's like a vegetarian matador. It's got very little legs. The guy is walking through the street with his mariachi friends because he's a musician. And one of them is Cheech, I want to say, or Chong. I can't remember which. And there are all these stereotypical jokes, kind of very funny. It's aimed at the adults to make the adults laugh about being married or not and drinking or not and stuff like that. And it's all just very cookie cutter. There's nothing inventive about the device. And then they start singing and they say, oh, I know exactly what song you should sing to her to get her attention and make her fall in love with you. And then they start singing pop songs, like from whatever was hip and then the top 10 when this movie was being written. And it is the dumbest thing I have ever seen. I thought for a second, like, I'm not a huge fan of singing, but I like singing in some cartoons. It fits, you know, like I'm curious, like, oh, is this going to be a really funny? Because, I mean, I'm listening to a guy that's a comedian. He's been in very funny stuff. I'm sure that this is going to be a funny Mexican folk song. It's all written custom for the movie. Nope. They're playing like "You Got What I Need," I think was one of the songs. And I was like, I stopped it. He didn't even finish the verse. I was like, nope, done.
Well, and I put in a link to their cover of Radiohead, Creep, when he plays it after his dad yells at him and says, "You're no son of mine." And he's laying there wallowing in self-pity, and he starts playing Creep, which drew a chuckle from me. But now that you've pointed it out, it really doesn't fit with what they're trying to do with the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't fit at all. And it feels forced. Like, I don't like some of the Dr. Seuss movies and stuff. I feel like The Lorax made some modern references and stuff, and it pulls me right out. Like, I just, you know, it reminds me, oh, I'm watching a movie that was made in Hollywood, not, you know, being pulled into the world, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. The one thing I think that the people that worked on the Book of Life could use is potentially your book pick this week.
So I booked a book on Kickstarter. I backed a book on Kickstarter, and its sequel that it's going to be sent out to me very soon. It's called The Art of Creature and Character Design. And it's by Sandy Calora, who's a filmmaker, director. Right now he's working on a independent monster movie called Shallow Water. But volume one came out, and it features photo and work and kind of interview chapters with the likes of Steve Wang, who did a bunch of creature work. He directed a few things that I like. George Duchel, who's kind of world known for some of his monster creations, and, you know, tons and tons of filmmakers and special effects guys.
Yeah. Any like big monsters that we'd all recognize?
There are. I mean, he's got people who worked on Alien. He's got people who worked on Predator. I mean, it's when you open the book, it's like flipping through a how-to of some of the greatest monsters ever made.
Cool. Right on.
And it has chapters that break down inspiration, color, form, texture, details, the silhouettes. I mean, they talk about how developing the culture for your monster matters, because if you don't, then how it dresses and how it does what it does doesn't have any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a great example of that would be like Predator.
Mm-hmm.
It's a warrior hunter culture. So therefore it dresses and mounts trophies and does things a very recognizable way. And it's a great book. I'm really looking forward to the volume two that's coming soon. Sandy's a talented guy. And the fact he was able to bring together some of the biggest names in special effects into a book is a testament to him and what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. So he kickstarted both volume one and two at the same time?
No, he did volume one. It was a raging success. And about 3 months later, he did volume two.
Wow.
People were chomping at the bit for a second one, and so he just did it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was probably, when you have that kind of, feel like that kind of beat on the creature creation industry, you probably just have too much content for one book. Like, it would be difficult to fit it all into one book.
Oh yeah. And they're not, it's not a huge book, but it's just packed with pictures and I'm not someone who's highly artistic and, you know, spending my weekends playing with Sculpty. But at the same time, it made me want to do it.
Mm. Yeah. No, I remember really enjoying doing like maquettes and stuff when I was in animation school. No, it wasn't a class. I wish it was, but I would do it just out of my own time and fun. I've had people sculpt. I feel like it was Sam, or no, sorry, it was one of my other characters. It was a character for a television show I was developing very early on in my career. And I had a friend that was doing 3D who was looking for something to practice on. I sent him the model sheet for one of my characters and had him model it in 3D. And it was a very cool device to kind of help me wrap my head around what the character looked like. And I've been meaning to do it for Charlie and Sam for the longest time, even just to kind of have their head or their bust on a stick, just so I can kind of like look at it from a different angle, from behind, three quarter, and just kind of figure out what they look like.
Yeah. And the thing I've noticed is I bought Starcrossed and I have it with me. And in the back, you did those different sketches of the different facial expressions and the kind of the way different angles and all that stuff that you kind of showed your process. And that kind of stuff, it helps develop a character. It makes a character seem more real when you see more than just three quarter view or straight on view of them. And they have two expressions, eyes open or eyes closed.
Closed, yeah.
The
secret there is that Sam was originally developed for animation. But Charlie was an addition to the comic strip. So Charlie, I have the most trouble with, because Charlie has that comic strip silhouette. Like, he's got that kind of iconic look to him. But, and not that Sam doesn't, but Charlie, I find very difficult to rotate. I still find he looks a little bit different from strip to strip. And you can see that drastically. Sam changes too, but if you go back to like my earlier strips and then come back to some present ones, you'll see a bigger change in Charlie and a more solid change in Charlie, whereas Sam has always been pretty round. It's just that I've changed the proportions a little bit, but the overall design kind of shape hasn't changed much.
Yeah, and I think they're both very good characters. It's just interesting that I would like to see them in a 3D format.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. I've been wanting to learn ZBrush, and I might try to do something in there just for shits and giggles. But I feel like I would probably be just, I don't want to have that software hump. Like, it's something I've been meaning to learn, and I probably should. But I also feel like just Sculpey and some time on a weekend would be nice too. I should actually, you know who I should talk to is, I should talk to Peyton, because he used to work in stop motion animation, and he has a lot of very good like foundation skills for building armatures, for building some homemade stuff. And I wouldn't have to worry about the things being production ready. Like, I don't want to go that far with them. I just want to do like a bust on a stick and kind of go from there.
Well, then you could mold it and, you know, you could sell a limited number from your store.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like those giant pink erasers that of like comic characters that used to stick on the back of your pencil in grade school. The Starcrossed Artistic Tools.
Yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Those erasers always were terrible.
They
would smudge and break, and it was awful.
Yeah, and it's also really distressing when you rub the nose off one of your favorite characters.
I never thought about that. That's hilarious. I'm having like repressed memories are flooding back to me. Quick, tell them about what you're listening to while I go cry in a corner.
Okay, so as I've said before, I don't play any Blizzard game except for Hearthstone, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of a junkie with Hearthstone. But I love the music. I admire music of all types, and it conveys all kinds of meaning. So I was bumping around the Blizzard website. I think I could link to it through Battle.net, and I was looking around the store, and I saw this 2-CD, 1-DVD set called Echoes of War. And it's 2 CDs of music from Diablo 3, StarCraft, and WoW. And it's kind of made into these whole symphonic movements and very big symphony sound. And it's amazing. And the documentary about how it all came about and who did it and how it was all done is also incredible. I watched it's an hour long, and it's got Russell Brower and the conductors and different arrangers from all over the globe coming in, and they recorded in Sydney and Australia, and it's so awesome. And I mean, credit to the composers of Blizzard, credit to the guys who were able to translate it over into these standalone pieces of music. It kind of makes me want to play just because I want to see what happens when I, for real, when I hear the music, because when I listen to it, I see certain things in my brain.
Mm.
Which probably have nothing to do with what's happening in the game. But it makes me see things, and I want to see what those really are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the music definitely stands on its own. For the longest time, years ago, I used to play without the music. Like, I used to have it really turned down quite a bit. Only because when I first started playing, it was a long time ago, and it was the original WoW, and I was in there for so long that the music got a little bit old because I didn't level that quickly. It wasn't until later when I picked up the game again when I decided to keep the music in there, and I was moving much faster through the game, so the music would change more often. And like, you go through, you know, the Lich King expansion, Pandaria has got wonderful music, really, really cool, obviously very Asian inspired. And now we're onto Warlords of Draenor, and that music is really, really good. And it's misleading. There's a lot of very heavy marches and timpani and stuff like that in the early bits of it. But I have the album, and it's much softer than you'd expect. Like, it's a lot quieter and more serene than you would think the Warlords of Draenor, you know, would kind of evoke. And if you have a chance, I mean, I'm going to check out Echoes of War, but you should just try to find just the albums by expansion. So like Warcraft, Burning Crusade, Cataclysm, Lich King, or Wrath of the Lich King, Mist of Pandaria. Like, try to find the soundtracks and listen to them. Because if you like Echoes of War, then you'll like the soundtracks, because they break things down into pieces. It's not like a game loop. Like, it's not something that just kind of repeats. It's much more in depth than that.
Yeah, I'm I have to say, it really has sparked my interest in listening to more of what they do. And it's really sparked my interest in going back and listening to some of the real classic symphonic stuff. Because I haven't listened to a lot of that since I was in college. And, you know, and there's a part of me that wants to kind of re-experience some of that stuff. And I think I'll be spending some time kind of getting my symphonic on over the next few months.
Yeah. Well, you can play WoW to level 20 for free.
I don't know if I want to, I don't know.
Yeah. You don't know if you want to go in there and.
Yeah. It's a hard, that's a hard thing for me to try to jump in and just do.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you tried Heroes yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah. You might like it. It's got the same competitive nature that Hearthstone does.
Yeah. I'm closer to trying Heroes than I am to trying WoW.
Yeah. And if you get into Heroes with some friends that are newish to the game and aren't like super serious about it, then it is a ton of fun, man. It's fun even when you lose. Like it's one of those games that the matches are short. You don't get angry because you invested your whole afternoon in this, you know, this last hour in a match. Like they're over in like 15 minutes. I think the longest match I've ever been in was 20 minutes.
Okay.
You know, and that's like higher level stuff when you're playing against both teams are pretty good and you're kind of seesawing back and forth. But like in the early games when you're just kind of messing around, like it's over quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time if you'd ever get the itch, let me know because okay. I'm in there. I have not been in a while. And I've been listening to Garrett and Kyle on Into the Nexus, and they've gotten pretty in depth. Like they're over my head now, I think, in terms of some of the things that they're talking about. But they do make me want to play.
Yeah.
And the whole culture around that community, because they've got a community on like in the game, is very kind of open to let's have fun. Like people have their serious game time and they do their serious thing on their own. But when they come into the chat and they say, hey, who's up for a quick match? They're there to just kind of bash skulls around and see what rolls and have some fun with it.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. No, I think you'd enjoy it. Have you watched the show? Have you listened to the show? ITN?
No. Well, there was one night where Daryl and I were trying to get ready to go live for Grumpycast and I was bumping around on Alpha Geek. And they happened to be on while we were getting ready to go. So I popped in to the chat room. I made some joke about, I think Garrett made some joke about dusting off his barbarian. And I said, yes, that sounds very euphemistic. And he shouted that out on the show. And then I was able to,
I think I remember that now.
I then bounced over and did my Grumpy Cast thing. So, yeah. But I like listening to Garrett talk about stuff. You're right. He does make you want to play things.
Yeah. And Kyle, too. Kyle does these great shows on the A-Move Radio YouTube channel, which I think is youtube.com/starcast. I could be wrong. Just go to A-Move TV and you can find all the links there. A-Move.tv, excuse me. The stuff that Kyle does is great because he does like tutorials. Like he does, hey, I'm going to stream for a couple hours and I'm going to talk about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And he's now, I just got the Patreon message that he's going to be taking games submitted by patrons and dissecting them and letting them know what they did wrong. Like as a willingness to learn, like as a teaching tool, not to just shit on them. Because Kyle, he's too nice to do any of that. But it's even playing with them, because I've played with them after the show a couple times, and I wouldn't want to play with them right now unless they really felt like slumming it, because I'm way far behind. Kyle is rank one in Heroes League, like he's very very good. He comes from a background of MOBA stuff though. He's a big Dota guy. The stuff that I really liked about playing with them though was that I was very open to say, like, look, let me know. Like, don't worry about being short with me. We're in a 13-minute match, and if I'm pushing out too far and you're like, Joel, get back, you're going to die, don't feel like you have to sugarcoat it. Like, just say, Joel, back here. Like, just, you know, order me around. It's fine. I would rather have someone that knows what they're doing tell me what to do rather than bitch about me being an idiot after. Right?
Yeah.
Not that they would. Well, Garrett might do that. but not, Kyle certainly wouldn't. Unless you give him permission. Unless you say, Kyle, I want you to hammer me with gripe if I'm doing something wrong or stupid. Keep in mind, my skill level is like, you know, I'm out of 10, I'm at like a 4. So don't expect me to like stutter step because I don't even know how to do that. Like, you know, I don't know all the characters. I only have a couple characters that I play. I enjoy them. They're fun. Raynor's a good start.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, it's a free game and you can drop $5 on the first three heroes. It's Raynor, Muradin, and Malfurion. So you got your assassin, your tank, and your support all ready to go. You can learn them all, and they're all fairly straightforward. It's not a complex thing. I think something I like coming from WoW about Heroes is it's like, it's essentially four buttons. Like, it's, you know, it's not crazy difficult to know what you're supposed to do. It's when and what combos is when it gets complicated later on with different characters. Like knowing that, oh, that's Leoric and he can do X, Y, and Z and he's on the other team, so I should be careful not to, you know, A, B, C. That kind of stuff is when it gets really in-depth. But to just learn your character, it takes like 10 minutes.
Huh. That might be something I try later, maybe in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me know, because I would be happy to take you on a tour.
Okay.
Of Heroes, because I suck. So we can be noobs together. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute for this episode of the Citadel Cafe, which is, of course, sponsored by tweakedaudio.com. For high-performance noise-reducing earbuds, visit tweakedaudio.com and use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code is TCC. So I'm going to revisit an old pick for a new pick. Lego Star Wars Small Scenes from a Big Galaxy is a photography book coming out this November. It's available for pre-order now and is a collection of photography from Finnish photographer Visa Litmäki. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. I have no idea how to pronounce Finnish stuff. Anyway, if you go back to episode 98 of the Citadel Cafe, which is Lego My Macro, his photo work on Flickr, he goes by Avenant, which is probably what I called him on the last show to make my life a lot easier. And he's on Avenant on Facebook and The Avenant on Twitter. And if you go check out his Flickr stuff, though, you can see all the cool stuff that he's done with Lego and Star Wars Lego. And it's this great photography. He was nice enough to give me permission through Facebook to use one of his photos as the title card art for episode 98. So if you go to episode 98, you'll see immediately what I'm talking about. And then check out his Flickr stuff. It's AVANAUT on Flickr, Facebook, and then The Avenant on Twitter. Really, really cool stuff. It's only $30 Canadian, $28.99 for the book, plus whatever shipping. And if it's on Amazon, I might even be able to get it for free shipping. So it's probably that or less in the States. It might be $24.99 because of the exchange. And I would highly recommend it. It looks like a pretty big book. It's obviously licensed by Lego, like their logo is right on the front of it. It looks amazing. I think it's fantastic that Avenant is doing this well with it, because it's a hobby. Like, he just does it for fun. But he's very, very good at it. I shouldn't say, I think he might be a professional photographer, but the Lego stuff is a hobby.
I remember the pictures from last time. In fact, I think I actually might have used one of them as like a desktop image for a few weeks, because it was of a snow speeder.
Yeah, there's a lot of Hoth stuff.
Yeah, I think it was like a Y-wing or something like that in the snow, and I thought it was just awesome. So I think I've used it as a desktop image at work for a few months because I just really liked it.
Yeah, there's a few things that I've seen on his Flickr site that were not there the last time, and they are very graphic designy ship portraits of the Lego model ships. They're almost silhouette. Like, there's just a little bit of light kind of bouncing around the edges to kind of give the idea, like to let you know, yeah, it's a Lego ship. I mean, you immediately see TIE fighter, X-wing, Y-wing, B-wing, but then closer inspection, you realize, oh, it's Lego. It's a photo. It's not a drawing. Like, it looks very, very stark at first, but they're very cool. So what about you, sir? What is your pick this week?
I went to a film festival a few weeks ago, and I saw like the 30th anniversary screening of Back to the Future on the big screen, and it was awesome. And one of the other things I did was I sat through a bunch of short films, and some of them were really good and some of them not so good. But the one that kind of stood out for me was the one that won the 2015 Best Visual Effects from a fan film. That's this Knights of the Old Republic, Broken Souls. And it's based in the Knights of the Old Republic world, which I was totally and completely unfamiliar with. And it was kind of awesome. There's lots of good costuming. Its special effects are great. It sets up kind of a story that I want to know more about. And I was sad that it was only like 7 minutes long. But I was super impressed. The huge Utah connection. There's the main fight scene is filmed on the Salt Flats. I know exactly where they are. But it was awesome, and I highly recommend you spend your 7 minutes or 8 minutes and just watch the video because it's good.
It's funny, we didn't actually talk before the show about lining up our Star Wars related picks.
No, we did not. In fact, I think I put mine in before you stuck yours in.
Great nerds think alike.
Yes.
Talk about a euphemism. Wow. Moving on. That is the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. You can go to tunein.alphageekradio.com to find out how you can listen on your favorite device. Choose Channel 1 for the Citadel Cafe at Showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. That's where you can find all the cool show notes for this episode. Hopefully, we'll have lots of links in there for you this week. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or reach out on Twitter or Facebook. Just find us by name. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. A big thank you, as always, to our 18 supporters on Patreon. Supporters like Yust Yufing, who has been a supporter since the very first. So thank you very much, Yust. Looking forward to making more stuff for everybody on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Joel Duggan. For as little as $1 a month, you can help support the Citadel Cafe as well as my webcomic, Starcrossed. And I do have some things in the works for the Patreon. I'm hoping to add a little bit more as far as the reward levels and break things down a little bit. And hopefully someday soon I will get off my butt and make an actual video. The next goal on Patreon is the Adobe Creative Cloud. So as we march towards that goal, it is a lot of help for me, for both my comic, my artwork, and this podcast, to have the Adobe tools at my fingertips to make really cool stuff for you guys. Don't forget about the Alpha Geek Media Streaming Server on Indiegogo. You need to search for those words, you will find it. Alpha Geek Radio is a great community. It makes up a lot of really cool podcasters. A lot of people at Nerdtacular are part of Alpha Geek, including, of course, Todd Whitehead, who is the guy behind Alpha Geek Media, and he's going to be at Nerdtacular streaming the whole thing for you. So if you like this show, if you like other shows on Alpha Geek Radio, consider helping Todd become a better media, I guess, endeavor with the streaming server to help everybody's podcast reach their listeners. And you're on the network too with GrumpyCast, right?
Yeah, and he also does streaming repeats of Beyond the Playlist. So
nice. Very, very cool.
And both of our guest grumps that were available are gone.
Wow. So do we know who those are?
I don't, not yet.
Okay. Oh, so because the guests are the supporters.
Uh-huh.
Right. And there's something else too that's really cool about the Indiegogo is that people that support have an opportunity to choose a topic and then have one of the many or two of the many podcasters on the network do a special one-off podcast about that topic.
Yeah. And that could be a lot of fun. I would be lying if I said I wouldn't. I would be... I'm hoping that I'm one of the people picked. I'll be honest. Yeah.
You put your name in the hat, did you?
I did.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun. You can follow me on Twitter with just my name. Also check out Tumblr. It's Joel Duggan, same thing. And I've been doing a lot over there as well. Hammond, where can people find you online?
I am jhammondc on Twitter. You can go to jhammondc.com and find links to pretty much everything I do. I host a show called Beyond the Playlist with jhammondc. The last two episodes are very frog pants heavy. I did a artist round table, the artist round table, which had Brian Dunaway, Phil Rude, Nick Gregory, and JF DeBoe. And then the week before that was my artist profile that I did with Brian Ibbett on a singer songwriter named Kevin Gilbert.
Oh, nice!
And that was a ton of fun to do. And then this coming Sunday, one of my bucket list interviews goes up, and it's a guy named Jeff Hatrix. And he is one of the vocalists for the band Mushroomhead.
Oh, is that you? Show me a picture of those guys, I think.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they're the guys with the crazy makeup?
Uh-huh, and the masks. Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, his goes up on Sunday, and it's one of those, well, he was one of the ones that I put on the list and said, if I could get to him, then I feel like I'm doing something right.
You have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Interrupt the morning stream. I'm going to pinch them off. Sam is suggesting that I put Segway Master into my resume. I will defer to the Segway Master. I am a student of Segway Master Merritt.
April posted a Vine.
That killed me. I was laughing so hard at that. April is hilarious. And she's on a flight from, I think, Seattle to Salt Lake City. There is a child or two children screaming on this plane. And April is just deadpan looking at the camera and vining this. And you can hear how shrill these kids are. Both of them sound like they're under two.
When we flew to Hawaii, I sat next to a 10-year-old kid. He had the most noxious gas ever. Every time he broke one off, I took two damage. And it was like sitting next to a leper gnome.
He is in Singapore. I know that much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like work commute. Tomorrow morning, or yeah, today, I guess. It's time travel is hard. Thanks again to Sam in the chat room for hanging out, and to Growly Bear, if you're out there listening in Singapore. Very, very cool, as always, and we will see you guys next week.